7th Avenue Pizza, the official pizza of the Soda Pod.
The Soda Pod, the official beer and hockey podcast of 7th Avenue Pizza.
Segment number two here in MNCAA. It is episode number 108. Max Veach with us for our NCHC recap. Frozen Faceoff this past weekend, Max. It was the Denver Pioneers who took home the NCHC championship. Shouldn't say that's surprising, but it did break a trend for the Pioneers where, let's just say that,
technically I'll the underdog.
Technically the underdog, right? You know, we talked about it last week. Denver has approached the Frozen Faceoff, at least from the eye test, a bit differently. It seems like they came out with something to prove this past weekend, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. It was nice to see them kind of go full bore. And I don't think that there was, after, you know, the first period of either game, any sign of really letting up or, you know, playing on their heels or anything like that. And there was quite a bit of, you know, our offense needs to do the work, and they did in order for them to win. But that's totally what we expected, and Denver executed just like they needed to. And given where they're at right now in terms of the seeding, I think they have to like what they're seeing out of that game plan and like the chances for it to continue to work in the future.
Yeah. So, and it probably helped too for them, some motivation. You touched on this last week where when Omaha and North Dakota went to bat, and we'll break it down here just a second, seeing Omaha take down North Dakota, that pretty much said, hey, we got a chance at a higher number one seed. I wonder if that probably gave them some motivation as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, if they made it to the championship game, they were pretty much locked into a one seed. The fact that they were going against Omaha means that they could have easily jumped up to third, which they ultimately ended up doing. And that just gives them a little bit more preferential treatment. That didn't really help them in terms of where they ended up having to go. But if you're Denver, it was going to be a long road trip anyway. It's not like any of those regionals were in Denver again or anything. So it was going to be a bit of a trek regardless. If I'm on the Denver team, I'm a little bit happy that I do get to go to like a larger metro area versus some of the other schools that are going to other locations. I'm not going to specify which one I'm trash talking here, but it didn't buy them much, but it does give you a much better feeling and a little bit better first round opponent there as well.
Yeah, and we'll talk about the bracketology here in just a little bit, Max, but let's go ahead and break down those two matchups in the NCHC. Actually, for those who are counting, there were three games that occurred this past weekend. So what I meant to say was the two semifinal games to start. So again, we touched on it, North Dakota and Omaha, the Mavericks, who have apparently figured out the Fighting Hawks, did it again.
Yeah.
And it was an Erdahl hat trick, 6-3. So Omaha, not only getting to St. Paul for the first time, they punched their ticket to the championship game. And Max, watching the highlights of this, I was in beautiful Bismarck, North Dakota. I was calling some games in junior hockey, but it caught the highlights of it. And one thing I noticed was Omaha, for whatever you want to make of it, they just seemed to have almost, you know, they were there before North Dakota could get there. I mean, they were a step ahead of them, and especially on the forecheck, North Dakota didn't really open up the ice like they normally would like to. That kind of transitional play, the carrying the puck in with possession, getting the cycle game started. North Dakota didn't really get much of that this game.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised when it came down to it in terms of just, you know, the overall scoreboard at the end. But North Dakota comes out and they end up scoring first, and then they just kind of relinquished that and were playing, you know, scared. It was one of those things that they had seen this story before, and you could kind of see it playing out like that. There was quite a few passes that you'd see North Dakota normally making that they just weren't able to find the tape of the other guy, or it was bouncing over the stick, or I'm not entirely sure what was going on. I was talking to another buddy who said that he really didn't like the ice at the X, and that was, you know, a common theme for people that are in North Dakota, and that might just be an excuse for why they haven't had success in St. Paul. But if there is something to it, it could just be a little bit something different that they're not used to. But I think personally that Omaha really is kind of that kryptonite, if you will. And it's funny to say that against North Dakota being the green team. But I think Omaha has been the kryptonite for North Dakota. There was a stat that of their 11 losses this year, 8 of them came between Omaha and CC. Yeah. So, I mean, there's something to say about that. It's a good hockey team that just can't seem to figure out two teams, unfortunately, in their own conference. But they had the one seed going in, so they were still doing plenty well in other areas. It's just one of those odd scenarios where it's crazy to see it happen over and over again, but it did. And I know a lot of North Dakota fans are kind of upset that they're not going to end up in that South Dakota regional just because it is so close and this, that, and the other thing. But if I'm a North Dakota fan, I'm counting my blessings that I'm not in the same regional that Omaha is, because that's just one team that you might have to face in order to get to the Frozen Four. And I, given the history this year, I don't know that they'd be able to do it. They just wouldn't have my confidence going in. That's for sure.
They did draw the Gophers, and Max on the Huskies Warmer Nose podcast with myself and shall we say a one-time co-host who apparently works a lot now. I actually, in sort of our discussion last night, I picked Omaha to beat the Gophers.
Really?
In that sense, I did. And the reason I did is, it's, you know, when you break down what Omaha was able to do with all the star power, with all the offensive skill that North Dakota possesses, and what we've seen from the Gophers this year is at times, especially with a defensive core that's young, figuring things out, Omaha looks to get in your face and do it in a hurry, right? I just feel like they're going to give the Gophers fits in terms of taking away time and space all over the ice. And I just wonder, with sort of that suffocating type, you know, whether it's a forecheck or a backcheck, I just don't know if the Gophers will be able to figure them out. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I look at it, and it's always one of those stigmas of, you know, Big Ten team is going to want to score a lot, and, you know, the NCHC team is going to want to play puck possession and physical and whatever else. And I don't know that it's going to be all of that, because North Dakota this year has been more of that, you know, skill and score a lot. Maybe not a lot. A lot's the wrong word. Denver scores a lot.
Yes, they do.
But they're more on that scale. If we've got a sliding scale, they're more on that scale than they have been in the past. So Omaha was able to figure them out. And I think as far as the matchup against the Gophers go for Omaha, it's really going to come down to Justin Close and how he plays for the Gophers, because it's been hot or cold for him this year. I don't want to be critical, because he's a great goalie. He was a Richter finalist, or not a finalist, a semifinalist.
Yeah.
But like he's had incredible, phenomenal highlight reel saves. He's been goaltender of the week in the Big Ten multiple times. He's got all the accolades. And then you see some of these other goals where it's like, and there was quite a few of them from many other goaltenders this weekend. Nobody's been perfect leading up to it, but
yeah, no one's been a Ryan Fancy this past week.
Yeah, no, nobody's riding, you know, big shutout streaks going in there or into the national championship that we've got to worry about. But yeah, I think that is going to be the difference maker. Minnesota is good at clogging those lanes up and kind of being a pest in terms of letting you get off good shots. But they've also had those leaky scenarios where they let one guy behind them. So if Omaha finds a way to get those breakaway chances, or you're able to capitalize on a 2-on-1 where you've got a guy with a really good shot, or, you know, you can make a defender commit when he's not supposed to, they're going to have to do that against Minnesota. And if they can, I don't think it's impossible. I think it is. I won't say it's likely either, but I wouldn't be shocked to see it happen. That's for sure. And you know, that's what we want to see out of these 2-3 matchups in these regional games, is something that's going to be close and not heavily favored to one side. And there's quite a few people in the Twin Cities area that might think that Omaha is a good draw compared to some of the other teams that they could have. But I think that specifically Omaha, that the team that we've been watching recently, and if they play that way again, is going to be a sneaky contender against them.
I think Omaha is kind of like the dark horse to me in the bracket. I think they do have a chance to really make some noise if they just play consistently, right? That was the one they didn't get the first half of the year. You turn the page into 2024. Was it three regulation losses, something like that, before the tournament? It was an absurd number, essentially. Absurd numbers aside, speaking of absurd numbers, how does Quinnipiac, for those who are St. Cloud State fans, lose to St. Lawrence? And the reason why we say absurd numbers, right, Max, is, you know, St. Cloud State fans, I don't think, I mean, they were washed, but I don't think they were particularly concerned about this matchup, including myself. And then second period down to nothing. And then you watch the clock continue to tick down in the third. And then the goaltender is out. And then it's a 3-0 St. Lawrence lead. And essentially that narrowed your ability to make the tournament into one linear road for the Huskies. And you had to win a couple of games. And unfortunately for St. Cloud, and we'll talk about their matchup against Denver, a game of ping pong, really. And Denver never led in this hockey game. They never led. Unfortunately, they're the last team that scored, ending the Husky season.
That is very true. So one quick thing on the ECAC, and I know that we're not an ECAC podcast. We're not anything outside of Minnesota here. But I'm putting my tinfoil hat on here, and it's the second year in a row that we see Quinnipiac, who is the odds-on favorite by a long shot. I think, you know, St. Lawrence in that game was a plus 400 to win, which is the largest margin I've seen in any semifinal game in a very long time. I guess maybe Colgate last year. Same scenario, but it's the same offender as well. Plus 400 for St. Lawrence to win, and they win that game pretty handily. Like, the tinfoil hat being put on, I'm admitting that this is one of those wild conjecture. You've got no theory to back up. There's no evidence or anything. But Quinnipiac loses and we get another ECAC team in. It seems very easy and plausible for somebody, you know, in the commissioner's office or whoever else to be talking to the players or coaches or whatever channels you need to say, hey, take a dive and then turn it back on in the postseason so we can get some more coverage out there and let one of these, you know, lesser teams in. My own rebuttal to my own argument is that I don't know that Cornell's a lesser team. I think Cornell probably does deserve to be in there as much as just about anybody. I think they did end up climbing to 12 in the pairwise, right?
That sounds right, yeah. Because it was essentially between them, Colorado College, depending on the scenarios, right? It was in that 14 to 12 bubble. Yep, in UMass, correct.
Okay. So like there is some, you know, credence. I said I would redact my claims about it being an inside job from the ECAC if Cornell ended up winning for that specific reason, and they did. So like take that with a grain of salt. I do think Cornell is gonna, you know, give some fits and show that they are a real team, despite being from the ECAC and playing even less games than Quinnipiac and having an easier road there, whatever. But the pessimist, the skeptic, the whatever, the negative part of me, which is, if you know me, quite a large part, always has to find something that might be amiss there. And it seems like every year, if it happens again next year, it's almost as often as Mark Stone going on LTIR and the Vegas Golden Knights bringing in extra help for the postseason. So
Vegas, not Tampa Bay. Interesting. I thought you would maybe mention both, but no, didn't.
Yeah, both. Honestly, both. Yeah. But like, put that in the tickler file. If it happens again next year, I'm officially stamping it as a, you know, collusion within the conference and something that needs to be addressed. But we're officially on watch right now. But on that same note, talking about what was the matchup we were previewing here? I'm already lost. St. Cloud and Denver.
Yeah.
The back and forth, you nailed it with the ping pong analogy, because it was just that classic game of scoring one after the other. And, you know, St. Cloud started it. You mentioned that Denver didn't have a lead. It's the same thing when the Patriots won the Super Bowl against Atlanta. They never led in that game. Technically, they won the Super Bowl with 0 seconds of you know, a held lead in the game. So you hate to see that as far as, you know, a Minnesota general supporter. Some people love to see St. Cloud lose. I would prefer to see them lose in like heartbreaking fashion, like in the Final Four or Frozen Four or, you know, in the postseason. I would like as much Minnesota representation as we can get. But you had to love that game from the perspective of good hockey. There was only three penalties each, no goal scored in the whole third period. So it was nerve-wracking, exciting to get you kind of, you know, buckled in and your attention on it. But it was a really good game overall. It's not something where you're seeing a blowout, and I never expected to see that in the NCHC finals here as well. But it was disappointing as far as the St. Cloud State fans or Minnesota in general fans would say at the very end, albeit not one that I think is ultimately all that surprising given how the teams played at the end of the year.
Yeah, it was a roller coaster ride of a season for St. Cloud. Really tough non-conference schedule, a week break, and then you go 7-0-1 before the holiday break. You come back. You beat Bemidji twice, a team that went on a heck of a run after that game.
Oh, yeah.
And let's just say St. Cloud, I mean, they had a tough opponent too. I think Denver, North Dakota to start the first two matchups in conference play. Colorado College mixed them in. Just never were really able to get the train rolling again. Started to a little bit toward the end of the season, but I have you to thank, Max, because if St. Cloud did not get swept by the Bulldogs, I still feel like they
probably, hopes would be up.
Well, I think I still think they would probably be in a similar spot. Sure. Unfortunately, they probably would have been where Colorado College is, somewhere in that 14, maybe 13. I'm not sure they would have had enough. I still think they would have had to get to the conference, to at least the conference championship game, and they did not do that. But at the end of the day, right, I think you hit it. St. Cloud probably deserved the fate that they did. Denver is a heck of a great team. Denver, by the way, got a nice draw, I think, in terms of
psychology.
Probably you could argue the best draw. So with that being said, Max, because we're sort of post NCHC conference play and we're kind of waiting the next couple of days for the tournament to start, we've got some news for both of our squads. I'm going to start with yours, and this one hurts because
it's painful.
It's painful. However, I think we're both in the same boat that says we're happy for the kid. He absolutely deserves this opportunity. Yes. It just thinks that that opportunity is not going to be with the Bulldogs. I'll let you take it from here, but you're losing a guy to the pros, essentially.
Yeah. So for those that aren't aware or get their news through MNCAA, first off, I'm so sorry. What are you doing here? Second off, Ben Steves ultimately decided he was finished with college. He wanted to take the next step in his career, signed a entry-level two-year deal with the Florida Panthers organization. So it sounds like he'll have the opportunity to play in Charlotte with the Checkers, I think is their affiliate.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe get an opportunity. I think they're postseason eligible right now as well, or in a spot where they would make it. So they're going to get a treat down there. I've already contacted the two people I know in the Charlotte area to say, you know, go cheer on Steves for me because he deserves all the praise in the world. And I think he will be successful there. He is a little bit undersized as far as, you know, what teams are normally looking for. But in today's NHL, I don't think that's nearly as big of a deal as people have made it in the past. Mm-hmm. So always time for him to grow a little bit more. But the Panthers were the only team to invite him to their development camp. 2022, I think it was, in the story I had read from shout out Matt Wellens, I think, as far as the UMD beat reporter goes for the Duluth News Tribune there. He had put together a good story. Go read that if you need some more details on it. But 62 points in 72 games at UMD, incredible. He's made the NCHC all-rookie team his first year and then all-conference, technically second team this year, but certainly recognized a lot throughout the season in both of those runs, more than 20 goals in both. He was near the top until the last couple of weeks here for goals in all of college hockey. And to see that recognized and to see him going on to get that opportunity, it would be really, really hard and frankly stupid to fault a kid for taking that opportunity. You never know what's going to happen, you know, in your next year there. You could get hurt or something else could happen. We saw what happened to Anhorn last year. He's out for a good chunk of the year after a really, really good season and came back strong this year, but that's not always what happens. There's plenty of guys that have gotten hurt and just came back and not been the same. So sad to see him go, happy for all the memories and really excited for his opportunity. And I think most people from UMD feel the same way.
Yeah, and I'll be selfish to say I think a lot of teams around the NCAC are silently rejoicing knowing that they won't have to shadow him on the power cloud. He was a Husky killer, especially over the past couple of seasons. But Max, as college hockey always does, right? Rosters always turn over, right? And one of the questions that Bulldogs fans have is, well, now that Steve's has gone on to become a pro, what's next for the Bulldogs? We've sort of teased this here and there. Let's just say that we both also in agreement that this is a one-off for UMD. I do not expect the Bulldogs to have a similar rough season as they had this year. And there's plenty of talent to be excited about. Why don't you touch on a couple of those that you are, I should say, expecting to join and why you should be excited about it.
Yeah. I know we're talking about Steve's and we're alluding to forwards here. Number one, I'm excited to see what UMD does at the goaltender position. I think Stasekel is grad eligible, but we've got a guy that's been, you know, waiting and biding his time down in Green Bay. He's been an incredible player at the junior level as well. And I think he is going to be more than ready and more than capable when he does make that transition. And I do think it happens next year. So that's one for sure that I am very excited about. Many people at UMD are, you know, critical of the ability to score and the offense and everything else. And I think rightfully so, to some extent. I don't think we're ever going to be, you know, leaders in the clubhouse as far as scoring or points or whatever. That's certainly going to be a Hockey East or Big Ten or maybe one team, probably Quinnipiac, from the ECAC almost every single year, just given the competition and the style of play and size of players and this, that, and the other. With that being said, there's certainly room for improvement. And I think there's hope for UMD in terms of that improvement opportunity. Namely, you think of guys like Zamplant and Fargo, 64 points in 51 games. And I'm not saying all these stats are up to date. I know they were correct at one point. They may have played games that I haven't kept up with since then, but we'll just go through a couple of them. Teammate of his in Fargo, Harper Benz, 36 points in 58 games. Not as flashy, a really good, sizable, consistent player. Familiarity with Zamplant, if he comes in with him, awesome. You're already going to have that connection. We've seen how connections like that work, granted, from a more prestigious entry point in Boston College with a full line of really young guys coming in, having that time already together. You learn some of those tendencies, how they play, where they might be on the ice, this side or the other thing. Two other guys, same type of connection. We've got Jason Shagabe and Blake Becken in Green Bay. 50 points in 53 games, 49 points in 61 games, respectively, for those two players. Not necessarily as high of a point total or production or whatever you might want to call it. Both incredible players, both equally as excited about all of them. Mr. Hockey in Shagabe, and very excited based on what I've seen from Blake, albeit limited, admittedly, but from the highlights I get from the UMD Bulldogs pipeline account on Twitter, X, whatever we're referring to that still, it's all been really, really good. And so in addition to that, I don't know if Max Plant is going to be coming in next year or not. I think that was the plan, straight out of the National Team Development Program, 27 points in 21 games. So those are the people I'm talking about as far as forwards that we're excited about. And then you've got guys like Ty Hansen, who's another Hermantown guy in Sioux City, a defenseman scoring 36 in 52 games. And a lot of those are assists. You know, I'll be upfront about that. I don't expect him to be your, you know, number one power play driver captain. I think Pionk is going to kind of retain or pick up on that role a little bit more next year as well. But another solid piece that can produce from that defensive position makes all the difference in the world for UMD when you're talking about, you know, that second line of your power play. You're getting some extra minutes in there as well. And for the haters and doubters that say you're getting excited about, you know, young teenagers or whatever, it's worked for a lot of East Coast guys. We've got a 17-year-old in Macklin Celebrini leading the NCAA in terms of the points for Robbie Baker and scoring goals left and right and whatever accolades you want to give him, he's earned them. So do I expect any of these guys to be Macklin Celebrini? No. I'm just saying it can happen. Younger guys can produce in the league. So I'm really excited about those guys. And I don't want to leave out anybody. I think Ashton Doms, John Stout, Carter Murphy from Texas UMD's first Texan. Those are all really, really good names to keep an eye on. Maybe some of them make the jump. I have no idea how the roster is going to kind of shake out. Probably going to depend heavily on how many portal guys end up coming in, how many transfers we have leaving when that opens in 5 days, 6 days at the time of this recording. Let me check how many days are in the month here. 6 days at the time of this recording. That's just to say that, you know, it's not something where we're, you know, hoping and praying we get some things and relying strictly on the portal. We do have a really, really good set of guys that are committed to be coming in that have produced at those levels, you know, even, you know, keeping up with some of the top guys in those as their peers, we'll call it. And something that I think will translate to the college game. So it's not all doom and gloom. Sad to see Steve's leave. Sad to see some of these other, you know, graduates and seniors leave as well. But excited to see what some of these other guys can do in terms of filling those shoes.
Blake Biondi also in the transfer portal. That one surprised me a bit.
Yes.
What didn't surprise me about a name that entered the transfer portal just today, Max, was Dominic Bassi for St. Cloud State. Now, first of all, you know, I should also point this out, is this is the first season under Brett Larson that the Huskies have not made the NCAA tournament. So we've been spoiled. Really, we've been spoiled. We had a national championship run in 2021. Just kind of felt like St. Cloud just didn't have the it factor, right? And you could tell throughout probably the second half, Dominic Bassi, he's always kind of been an up and down goaltender, even with his time in Colorado College. He comes over here. He was given the number one opportunity. It definitely, you could see the transition and goal essentially from end of January into February. They basically handed the net to Isaac Posh, who as a freshman, I think he played all right. I mean, yes, in the semifinal game, I think there was a couple that he probably would like back, but you know, St. Cloud's been confident and comfortable putting a freshman goaltender like David Rennick, also with his freshman season 2018, also started a couple of games at the NCHC Frozen Faceoff. So it sucks, but you could see the writing on the wall for him. Mind you, and Max, maybe I should just double check with you before we get out of here for our CCHA crew coming up next. But this is the last off season, I believe, for the COVID extra year. Is that correct?
I think so. This will be the last one, because if you came in 2020,
freshman
2021, 2022, 2023, 2024, 2025. Yes. So this should be the last one.
Because Bassi was a senior this year. So if he's in the portal, that means he's looking at either a graduate or a fifth year option, one of the two. Correct. So, going to be interesting. I think St. Cloud will be heavily involved in the transfer portal. Anhorn again's aged out. Jack Peart, there's rumblings he may sign his entry level deal with the Minnesota Wild. Between you and I, Max, I think he could use another year of college, not because I'm a St. Cloud fan, but I'm actually kind of disappointed in Jack Peart. And I'm going to let you kind of run with this a bit. I think he actually stepped up a lot and did a lot of good things when Anhorn went out last year. Agreed. I think there was an expectation that he would continue sort of elevating his game even into this season. I don't think he necessarily did that. Now, granted, part of that is you don't want to be more than what you have to be, especially on defense, right? So
correct.
There wasn't, shall we say, maybe the open door there. But it did kind of feel like he had a bit of a down year this year, and not in points or anything like that, but just didn't feel like he had a well-rounded game throughout this season. Mind you, you know, you could look at the entire Huskies team and, you know, maybe that's part of it as well.
Yeah. Two things that are true or can be true. I think that the St. Cloud State goaltending was not as good as it was last year. And I think their defensive schemes were not as good as they had been last year or the past couple of years, we'll call it. I think the first one leads to Isaac Posh getting more of an opportunity. And probably that leads to, you know, Bassi entering the transfer portal. I would be shocked if Posh doesn't get, you know, the starting net or at least the majority share of time next season. We'll see how that pans out. But Peart, I tend to agree with you. Especially on the defensive side, as far as needing or benefiting from, maybe not needing, benefiting from some additional time at the collegiate level. We've seen that younger guys can make that jump. Faber obviously doing okay for the Wild as well. But I would say that Peart obviously wasn't producing the same as Faber either. And so coming in as he played this year would be tough. It would put them in a tough position. It might put him in a tough position. Whereas if he stays another year and can get maybe a bounce back year or a little bit more confidence playing again, maybe against some younger guys like UMD, hopefully he doesn't have that much success against them as a fan. But I do want him to succeed as a Wild fan. So I'm put in a tough position right now. I don't know whether to cheer root for him against him.
And that's sort of the million-dollar question, right, Max, is, you know, what do the better hockey minds look at the season as, right? Was it more a fault of him? Was it a fault of the team as a whole? You know, and sometimes with younger players, right, sometimes that change of scenery actually benefits them a little bit. Maybe it is a fit kind of issue or a stylistic or a structural thing that maybe he isn't developing the way that maybe he thought. So there's so many things that go into it, right? But like you said, you know, it comes down to Peart having the best chance to develop into the second round pick that the Wild need on the back end. They need more young defensemen. They're getting old back there, we'll put it that way. Max, so yeah, I don't know, we'll have to see. We'll end on this note. Do you think Peart comes back for a year, or do you think he signs?
Just given where the Wild are at and the free space they'll have in their ability to sign players next year, I think they're going to make no commitments to him and say, hey, we're you know, really looking to fill these spots. I think that they would much benefit much more from him staying in the college ranks for another season here. And that's me being a little bit selfish as a Wild fan, but I'm willing to make that concession as a UMD fan. So I think he does stick around for one more season here, tries to get a little bit more production, and he'll have a much easier jump if that's the case. So bet on himself, which is strange to say if you're saying stay in college, but bet on yourself producing more next year for having a bigger or easier leap once you do make that jump.
The counterpoint to that, Max, and I promise we'll end on this counterpoint. I feel like we've been kind of running in circles a bit, is Iowa has been decimated by either call-ups or injuries on their back end.
That's
so
fair.
You know, and so I'm not saying that opens the door per se, but if there's an argument to be made for Jack signing, you could argue that, okay, maybe there is a, I don't want to say a better opportunity, but maybe you could say maybe there's an opportunity at the next level for him, where maybe the development model where he has grown all he can grow at college and he needs that new challenge. It's tough to say. Honestly, I could see it going either way. But like you said, you just hope he succeeds in his hockey career, whether it's one more year at St. Cloud or if he does indeed sign his entry-level deal with the Minnesota Wild, who desperately need young defensemen in their lineup and in their system, really. And so for that being said, Max, again, thank you very much for this week. It's now time to go over to the CCHA, which, oh boy, here we go again. That's up next here on NCAA.